Hi everyone, welcome. My name is Marcos Nogueira and this is Dave. So we are both MVPs. I am MVP for System Center, Cloud and Data Center Management, and Dave is MVP for Hyper-V. So to just start, our goal here is with our experience delivering SharePoints across multiple customers, we come always advising our customers that we should give, or we are always giving some tips and some best practices regarding virtualization of SharePoint. Sometimes we know that the next finish is not the best way to do it, and sometimes our SharePoint, it's not performing well. So the goal over here is to try to pass our experience on the field virtualizing the SharePoint to you guys, then you can use that knowledge that we are passing to you and to do your implementations and not take the same mistakes that probably we did already seen or we already did, okay? So for the agenda today, we'll be basically covering four main areas. The planning, where you see where Dave, it will cover most part of it. When you have issues or what is the best way to plan, you will see lots of best practices and tips. Then we cover the deployment. Let's see if our gods of demos will help us. Then we cover the monitoring part. So just to see that how easy it is to just monitoring. So let's hope that we have some errors, because this morning, when we tried to just deploy this again, the deployment is so good that we have zero errors. So let's see if the demo gods will help us this time. And the last part, it's the protection. So how you can protect, and this will be help with Azure as well. So we'll cover DPM, Data Protection Manager, inside of the System Center suite to protect this. Okay, so just to kind of have an idea of the audience, who is here SharePoint administrator? Okay, cool. Who is hosting SharePoint? Nice. Who has a SharePoint 2013, but it's not performing as you want it? Okay, welcome to the club. Who is using System Center to administer the SharePoint? Okay, welcome. The club is bigger, see? We have some challenges to find the right solution to implement SharePoint, either virtualized or not. Yeah, okay. So who wants to learn more about deploying SharePoint specifically on Hyper-V? That's a very good answer. Congratulations, guy. And none of them, but you still have interesting to hear us and what do you have to say? All of them. Okay. So regarding this, I will pass to Dave and let's see. Let me hack the labs now.
Let's do a mic check here. Can everybody hear me okay? All right, excellent. Well, we've been hurrying along trying to get some brand new labs and demos set up for everyone here. And I have to tell you that Marco's got some pretty cool scripts for deploying and provisioning his SharePoint farms. So I'm hoping that his demo gods will help him out here. So I want to walk you through a little bit about planning your SharePoint and your virtualization experience with Hyper-V. A bit of my background is I'm a Hyper-V MVP, so I specialize in the core hypervisor. Performance issues, normally getting phone calls, it's slow, something's broken, you know, things aren't working the way that they should. So when Marco came and approached me about co-presenting, one of the ideas was to give some good background around the core hypervisor and, you know, what it's going to take to make sure that SharePoint is going to perform adequately in your environments. All right, so let's talk a little bit about what is virtualizable, and I guess this is kind of a bad phrase and a bad topic because in today's day and age, it's what isn't virtualizable. pretty much everything inside of your data center stack now with Server 2012 R2 is virtualizable. It is fully supported by Microsoft, so you can pick up the phone and you'll have one throat to choke, so to speak, if something does go wrong. So pretty much everything is going to be virtualizable for you. We're starting to see more customers moving into virtualizing their core domain controllers and their infrastructure services now. This is fully supported with 2012 and 2012 R2, so that's good news. All of your front-end web and application servers are also fully supported in a virtual fashion. This is also fully supported to run kind of a co-located workloads between your on-premise data center as well as your infrastructure that you have. So the cool part about it is it's one management infrastructure that you're going to be able to look after for both worlds. So that's really cool. Your SQL services are definitely virtualizable. The other cool thing about virtualizing SQL is that guest clustering or availability groups are also fully supported within your Hyper-V environments. So as you need to scale your SharePoint infrastructure on Hyper-V, you know that your back-end infrastructure, hypervisor, things in behind the scenes will definitely support you. And then any part of your back-end infrastructure from your SharePoint 2013 and any of the back-end workloads. One of the key points here is we're starting to see customers inside of their data centers getting a lot bigger host servers. So how many of you are starting to see host servers in the neighborhood of, 256 gigs of RAM, 64 cores or 512 gigs of RAM or more inside of your data center? So the nice thing about virtualizing SharePoint is that it'll take everything that you can throw at it. So if you've got 64 cores and you want to build a fast and robust farm, you can throw all of that infrastructure behind it. So that's really good news. So you bet size matters when it comes to SharePoint. So we wanted to throw up a little bit of information on general virtual support, because we get this question a lot from our customers that they want to be on a supported platform, a supported foundation. So for SQL Server, pretty much all of your versions of SQL Server that are going to be in mainstream support today are going to be fully supported by Microsoft. And this supports not only virtualizing the workload, but also your guest clustering as well that you'll need to run underneath to make your workloads highly available. So this is all fully documented and can be downloaded from the links there. We've also got general supportability for SharePoint as well. Marcos and I wanted to put in some links inside of our slides so that you guys could get some more general information surrounding this, because we want to make sure that any platform or any solution that's provided is fully supported, is documentable, and the technical architecture that backs up your designs is fully supported by Microsoft. All right. How are you making out in your demos there, Marcos?
Good.
Good? Excellent. Okay, so the EPG group came out with some performance studies, and some of the interesting pieces of scalability for SQL Server and SharePoint is that this study was actually done on Server 2012 and not on Server 2012 R2, and the scalability numbers are actually really impressive, to the point that, we're seeing about a 6.3% differential from running your SQL Server workloads on physical to virtual hardware. So that means that your performance penalty that you're going to take is really only about 6.3%, and that differential is going to be the same pretty much across any hypervisor that you're looking at. So the good news is you're not going to take a big performance hit by virtualizing your SQL Server infrastructure. You're going to see a 6 times performance increase. And where are you going to see that increase? Is where you're going to be adding additional virtual CPUs. So as you take and you add additional virtual CPUs to your workloads, you're going to start to see your performance increase incrementally for your SQL, which is really good news. How are you doing there, Marcos?
I just destroy and recover.
Perfect. We were going to do good cop, bad cop here, so we're going to see who is going to take and who is going to go through. We also saw a 5% improvement in transaction response times as well. So When you look at these new super servers, these new big compute nodes that you have, the more horsepower that you can take and that you can throw behind things, the better. And then you see additional benefits with Server 2012 and Server 2012 R2 with ServIO support. You've got better support for virtual fiber channel and so on. So the ability to take and do more with these workloads is really there and is available for us. The same study that was done also looked at SharePoint performance as well. And so the compute node that was used for this was an HP DL380 with 64 cores, 512 gigs of RAM. This was running on an EMC VNX 7500 with 20 SSD drives, so 20 enterprise SSD drives running in behind the scenes. And then that actually leads me into something near and dear to my heart, which is IOP. And IOPs are your friend. And the more that you can take and you can throw at these workloads, the better. And really, SSD is your friend today, because you're going to be able to get the robust performance that you need to run and scale this infrastructure. And now with the ability to take and to have storage spaces, and the ability for auto-tiering, and just using JBOD storage with Microsoft, the capabilities are just, they're way beyond what we used to have. And so with this study, just running on three hosts, they were able to achieve 1.3 million heavy users at about 1% concurrency, which is pretty impressive. That was all running off of a single host server. And then what they did is they expanded this infrastructure out to five hosts, so they continued to expand this out. And they actually brought this up a little north of 2 million-ish or so users. And so that really leads to, it's a real testament to where the technology is today. So what we really wanted to get forth and convey during this session was the fact that you don't have to worry about Hyper-V being your bottleneck. It is going to scale with you. It is going to have the capacity and the robust horsepower that you need to take and to scale this wherever you want it to go. You need to build big. You want to go into a hosting environment? Sure, go 64 compute nodes and over 8,000 VMs that you can run inside of a single cluster. This thing can scale and will scale with you. All right, so we put a download link in there, so if you guys want to grab the PowerPoints afterwards, you can just grab the report right off of the PowerPoint deck. All right. So a little bit of information about and kind of best practices. We wanted to make this a little bit of a best practice, notes from the field, things that we've seen. And so we kind of compiled the things that Marcos and I have seen throughout various customers. And there's some important considerations that we have to take and that we have to look at. Like, for example, logical versus virtual processor ratios. For SQL Server, it's not really going to matter as much as it does for SharePoint, but the best practice recommendation from Microsoft is to have a 1-to-1 mapping. You can go up to a maximum of 2-to-1, but the recommendation is to stick at 1-to-1. So if you think of it, you've got 64 cores, then you can take and you can have 64 vCPUs that you can take and provide. Don't oversubscribe these things, not with SharePoint. The second thing is support for dynamic memory. You want to take and you want to be careful enabling dynamic memory for your SharePoint workloads, and it is fully supported for your SQL workloads. Setting up your virtual NICs with synthetic NICs, your VM queuing, your ServIO support that you have, and if you really need the performance, you can take and can use in-guest teaming, as well as you should consider using some of the network quality of service features that come with your virtual adapters and your vSwitches that you can now set up inside of Hyper-V. This adds a lot of robust performance benefits to your infrastructure. The next thing is you should always take and consider using fixed VHDX disks. Remember that with the new versions, you can get up to 64 terabytes in size on those disks. You'd never want to take and use snapshots in production. This is something that Marcos and I come across all the time, is we take a look at host servers and we see chain snapshots that are sitting on production servers, and that's not a good idea. So just don't do it, all right? So don't go down that road. We have full support for virtual fiber channel, in-guest iSCSI, as well as shared VHDX support. And there's also new features for taking and running over your host storage, where you can take be running this over SMB3, iSCSI, and you want to consider using SSD for these key and critical workloads. When we take a look at SharePoint and SharePoint high availability, the first thing that we have to look at is really tiering this infrastructure. SharePoint's infrastructure really has three tiers, and the back-end tier is going to be your database. And so for your database, you want to consider taking and putting this on a highly available SQL back-end, so you can take and use, you know, your always-on failover clustering, your traditional SQL clustering, or you can go with availability groups. But just make sure that as you have to fail over those back-end SQL nodes, that you've got some availability to take into failover beyond what you're going to see inside of the actual Hyper-V instances themselves. You're going to want to make sure that you scale this out, providing multiple application servers inside of your second tier. This is going to give you high availability for things like your searching, querying, indexing services, and stuff like that. And then the web front-end servers, you're still going to have to consider using probably big iron load balancers. We wanted to kind of make this an agnostic session from a vendor perspective, but most of the people that are in the room are probably going to be having things like F5 data center, F5 load balancers, or Citrix NetScalers, or some big iron that they're going to be putting in front of those web front ends, especially if you're going to be looking at geolocating that. And Azure is a great option for this now, because you can take and you can locate those front ends right up in the cloud. Okay, so the next thing that you can consider is the ability to take and combine dual levels of high availability. So this is where the virtualization stack really comes in. We want to take and run this on a highly available Hyper-V cluster. So in the event that we have a compute failure, so just a show of hands, we've been working with virtualization long enough. How many of you have experienced a blue screen, or, you know, we've had issues where we've had compute nodes that have gone down? And that's not really good for us, so we want to make sure that we protect ourselves, right? And so when we set up our SharePoint infrastructure, our SQL infrastructure, you want to make sure that you're configuring your failover priority and anti-affinity rules and stuff like that to control which hosts, which workloads are going to be going on and where they're going to spin up, just to make sure that we're not overloading one host in the event of failure, so we can take and control where these things are actually going. And the SharePoint itself should be living on some type of highly available disk, right? So like I said, there's lots of new options available with, you know, storage spaces if you wanted to just use JBOD storage. If you're using traditional iSCSI or fiber channel arrays, that's fine. Just make sure that you've got the availability at your back-end storage side. Your tier three deployments, your VMs are going to be taken running on that highly available storage. The nice thing is from moving around your workloads, live migration is fully supported inside of all of this infrastructure. So as it comes time to take and have a host failure, for example, these workloads can take and spin up on other hosts, and then we can control, once they're fixed, where they're going to come back. So we want to make sure that I like to call them like sticky resources inside of our clusters, so that if they move away, they can easily come back inside of that infrastructure. One of my favorite features that came out with Server 2012 and 2012 R2 was the ability to do cluster-aware updating. So just a show of hands of anybody that's heard of this. So do we have a few in the room? Probably about a third of the room has heard of this. Okay, so that's good. So we're going to have some of you that cluster-aware updating is going to be new to. This is a really, really cool feature. How many of you guys have come across Patch Tuesday and have had to patch your host servers? Well, this is Microsoft infrastructure, so it's going to need to be patched, right? Your clusters are no different than any other workload that you're going to be taking and running inside of your data center. So what cluster-aware updating allows you to do is have an integration so that you can automatically evacuate your virtual machines and your workloads that are running on specific cluster instances, and you can move those over via live migration over to other cluster nodes. The ability to do simultaneous live migrations help to get those virtual machines off one of those host servers faster and then bring them back once things are done. This is really cool that you can take and that you can do this, because really what it means is zero downtime and zero outages at your abstracted hypervisor. So at that Hyper-V hypervisor level, that's not going to be something that's going to be a point of failure where I'm going to have to take outages while we're doing patching or maintenance. And it's not really going to slow you down either, because this can be scripted, this can be set to self-updating, manually triggered. There's lots of ways to take and to get into this. Cluster-aware updating can also be extended to provide support for any of your hotfixes, firmware updates, and things like that. If you haven't looked at this, this is available not just for Hyper-V. This is available in general for kind of Windows clustering. This can also be managed via PowerShell as well. Okay? So as we take and have to patch one of these host servers, get one of the compute nodes patched, then we can take and roll through the rest of the infrastructure. And because our affinity rules are set up as such, the resources will just pop back to where they kind of want to be. How did I do? Did you have enough time? Demo gods are happy with you?
Let's see.
All right. All right, perfect. So I'll turn this back over to Marcos, and he's going to take and walk you through a little bit of information on integration with Azure and kind of extending your virtualization platform out there. I told him I'd talk a little longer to help him with the demo gods, so...
This part of Windows Azure, it's not new. The way that you can deploy this, probably you are familiar with Windows Azure. The integration that you have with Windows Azure infrastructure as a service, it's even greater every single day. So if you are aware, or it was available, the 2014, the SQL, CP2, it was available there. You can practice or you can test it. So regarding SharePoint, it's same thing. So we have a gallery of image that you can use, like the print screen, and starting to deploy VMs with geo-replicated and with durability as well. So this morning at keynote, they announced even further functionalities regarding Azure and regarding this high availability or these high density virtual machines. So regarding this, and then you have the old integration with System Center. So System Center 2012 R2 is one of the great tools that you can integrate your on-premises with Azure. So you can extend your data center from on-premises to Azure and just kind of load balance the workloads. So to give an idea, and just to give more kind of PPT that give you a design, you have your on-premises solution with the same Active Directory that you can extend to Windows Azure, and with the same connection, with the same network connection, you are extending your network as well. And using that functionality that you have on Windows Azure, you can deploy your SharePoint on the Azure and became available internally. So I have already deployed this several times and works perfectly fine. And sometimes if you want some developer machines or test machines, I think this is the best way to do it than spin some more VMs inside on your network. So you can burst the computing. You have a lot and a lot of things that you can do regarding the Windows Azure. One of the things that always the clients ask me is, and this is a good tip, is, okay, with SharePoint, it's basically a more intranet solution. What about authentication? What I can do regarding authentication regarding this? So ADFS is available, and we saw on the keynote as well that they improve a lot. It was not an easy setup, and sometimes some difficult to just troubleshooting. So now it's even easier to just implement ADFS and extend your experience on the internet with a single sign-on to Azure as well. Okay? So now we will give you some of the best practice that we found always on the field And this is purely our experience. So we'll come over a little bit more. And Dave, do you want to?
Yeah, sure. We can just go through this together. So these are going to be some of the best practices that are compiled surrounding virtualization, and specifically virtualization around SharePoint and kind of SQL resources. When we take and we configure the Hyper-V host servers, make sure that your parent partition has enough room to operate. Make sure that you don't take and overcommit all of the memory that's available on that Hyper-V host server. Make sure that you're leaving available RAM for the actual OS to perform and function itself, especially in large-scale operations. This is configurable when you take and you build your Hyper-V host servers, but don't forget about this, all right? Second thing is you want to use a minimum of 2 physical network adapters. Preferably, I really hope that you're looking at, you know, Microsoft Teaming, so the new teaming interfaces that are provided and that new functionality that's available inside of Server 2012 and R2 is absolutely fantastic. So how many of you have looked at that so far just by show of hands? Do you guys like that new interface? Do you like the fact that you can actually pick up the phone and phone Microsoft on that and you don't have to worry about getting, oh, well, that's an unsupported configuration. Go ahead and phone your vendor answer anymore. I love it. So that's where the 2 adapters come from. If you are building a highly available infrastructure, the traditional design of having multiple networks available for example, your host network, your iSCSI network, your cluster shared volumes, your live migration networks, and so on, that design is pretty much standard across the deck. Now, one of the things, like I said, is I really hope that you're taking and leveraging that new Microsoft teaming, the new teaming drivers that are there, because they're fantastic. And I don't know if you guys have tested the performance on those things. I haven't seen much for performance degradation coming through those teaming drivers, and we've done some pretty heavy load testing. I'm a really big fan as well as of large infrastructure for my networking backend. I'm seeing a lot of customers that I never thought would get there moving to 10 gig converged infrastructure because just the cost of moving there is a lot less. And the management and availability of these configurations is so much easier having 2 or 3 cables coming out of the back of a host server compared to your traditional 20 or whatever that you'd have for a proper design. It's a lot of ports that you consume configuring your virtual host servers properly. All right, you can also consider using NIC teaming inside of the VM guest networks as well if you do need to aggregate. It just depends on how you're coming through your switch stacks. All right, so the other thing is from a licensing standpoint, make sure that if you're setting up Hyper-V host servers, that you're not running ancillary services on that parent partition. Because the way that the licensing reads for that is it's designated as a Hyper-V host server. It's not supposed to be a DNS server, a DHCP server running other things. Make sure that you take and that you strip those down and that they're only running what they should. If you can, try running Windows Core on those, because now you can flip-flop back between your interfaces, going between Core and the GUI version. And if you're not comfortable running inside of Core, no problem. Just make sure that you're being very careful as to what you're actually installing on that parent partition. You don't want to take and store files that aren't supposed to be there for your Hyper-V storage. And don't oversubscribe your CPUs. We see this as a big issue where people are trying to do too much. They've got these, you know, big compute nodes that they have, and they're allocating 32 or 64 gigs of RAM, which is great. They're running dynamic memory. The nice thing is Microsoft's not really going to oversubscribe that memory the same way that other vendors would do that. And so just be careful that you're not taking overloading those things, you're scaling these things properly. Also, don't use those snapshots in a production environment, because this is going to cause you a lot of grief if something goes wrong and you lose those chains, especially inside of a highly available environment. So when we look at the actual configuration of the Hyper-V host computer itself, you want to be really careful about taking and doing things like running antivirus and such on those host servers. Marcos and I have seen this a lot, and if you do, make sure you set up your exclusions, because if you don't, and I've got active real-time scans running against VHDs or VHDXs, it's probably not going to have the desired outcome that you're looking for. All right. So if your mandate, and we've come across certain organizations that have a mandate, they have to run antivirus on everything. And that's fine. We can't change that. Just understand that there's a performance penalty for that. But if you do, please make sure that you're watching your antivirus exclusions so that you're not taking and actively scanning stuff that you shouldn't be, because this is going to take and is going to cause you problems. Make sure that your hardware is going to take and support second-level address translation. This is pretty common. Hyper-V is just not going to run otherwise, right? So the symptom that you'll see here is that, you know, you'll install a Hyper-V role, but now your VMs will turn on. This is just a fundamental support piece. If you've got hyper-threading, make sure that you can take and you enable it just to get additional support. Use fast connections like 10 gig. And this one here, I'm just going to take a minute on this one because this one's really near and dear to my heart. Hyper-V hotfixes don't come from Windows updates, all right? They are separate downloads that you must download for your host servers. You can't just run Windows Update, finish your update passes, and think that you're done with your Hyper-V host servers. You have to make sure that you stay on top and stay current with your Hyper-V hotfixes. Okay, so now that we know that these are separate downloads, great, we download these things from Microsoft. We install them. There's great PowerShell scripts out there in the community. They'll even go out there and do things like grabbing the downloads for you from a nice XML file, putting them in a working folder, unpacking them, installing them. Okay, so we've given you ways to kind of expedite that. Once you take and you update a Hyper-V host server with hotfixes, the integrated component version numbers change every time. So what you have to make sure is that you go into your guests and that you update all of your integrated components on your guests as well. Once again, great scripts out there from the Hyper-V community that will help you go check your integrated services and guest version numbers that you have. Make sure that these are consistent. So now when I go talk to a Hyper-V customer, the very first question that I ask them is, have you patched your server? Yeah, absolutely, Dave. I've patched my server, no problem. Did you happen to use Windows Update for that? Or WSUS or SCCM or something like that? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's all patched, it's good to go. We hit it on patch Tuesday, no problem. Did you happen to go through and download all the additional hotfixes for those? Because you're kind of running at RTM support of that if you're not. And so normally once you go through and you patch those things up, 95% of the problems are probably already addressed. Microsoft's probably already found the issues, and just make sure on that, all right? So I just want to take a minute on that, because in the past 3 months alone, I've had probably about a dozen customer calls, and the first thing we had to go back through was cycle back through and hotfix these things. All right.
So let's move on now to the deployment phase. And there are different ways to deployment SharePoint, okay? Who agrees with me? Lots of people. So one of them, it's manually. So the one that probably me, from the country that I'm coming, it's not very familiar. I'm a kind of not very active person on this way to just do repeatedly tasks.
Come on, I like next finish.
Yeah, it's good. One of them, it's through the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit. So it's a great way to automate the process and to have a build that you can automate as many times as possible. The other great tool is System Center Configuration Manager. So it's even more powerful than the MDT. My favorite one, or one of my favorites, is Virtual Machine Manager. It's one of them that we are using today to just show how easy it is to deploy an entire farm in different tiers. And of course that you can have orchestrator with VMM to even automate even more if you have a more complex organization that VMM by himself cannot do it. So if you are familiar with Virtual Machine Manager, this example is the way that it's deploy a tier 3 SharePoint farm. So here you can see that I can customize what is only for the WAM frontend, what is the application, and the SQL as well. So if I deploy this solution, at the end of this solution, what I'll see, it's a live SharePoint farm. So I don't have to do anything else besides giving the name of the solution that I want. Can be a name of the project that you want to deploy, or can be a name as you like it. Okay, it's the only thing that I need to do it. If I want to have less automated and more control, if I want, I can have it as well. So I will show both on my demo. But this is one thing that I really like it. On this version of 2012, we are only able to deploy generation one virtual machines. So the generation two, the new functionality that you have on Hyper-V 2012 R2, it's not possible yet to just deploy. So one of my tips regarding this is don't do like me at the beginning, that I starting to use like generation two, because then I can use all the good functionalities like booting from iSCSI and all of those. And then when you just start to create the service templates to just use those generation two, it's not available. And say, what I did wrong? Because when you have to choose, you cannot choose the virtual machines or the virtual templates. So this is a tip for you. Just create a generation one, and then you can use it. Even if you use 2008 R2, it's not available for generation two. So since 2012 that you can use generation two VM. So this is a very good tip that I did find out regarding me. So then you can attach this unattended installation. So you have lots of post scripts with the script. We will show you the script that we are using or that I'm using to deploy this, and we did use to deploy our labs. And it's just pointing to XML file and run it, and everything is created. So we are creating a lot of things that I will show you in a minute. Another thing that you can do on service templates is attach, like Dave explained to you, all the bits that you have regarding your network. So if you have load balancer, you just add the load balancer, and it automatically creates everything for you regarding for SharePoint. So again, you just press deploy, and at the end, you see everything green, everything is okay, and deploy it. It's one of my boss favorite features that we have. So basically, on one click, it's done.
It's like your big red Staples easy button that you have for SharePoint, right,
exactly.
Marcos?
Exactly. So another way to deploy it is with Windows Azure Pack. Windows Azure Pack is what is being done regarding Azure. It's not on the cloud. It's bringing all the concepts and on the look and feel that we have on Azure inside of your organization. So it's a free tool that you can have or install in your organization, and then you can integrate with System Center. You can pre-populate with your own gallery. You can integrate with Virtual Machine Manager, and you can have a lot of the good thing that Azure give, but on premises. And you can even manage and become the service portal for both areas. So for automate the deployment, basically you can use the old suite. So you have your Hyper-V host, your fabric layer. On top of it comes Virtual Machine Manager. By using Virtual Machine Manager, you have all the cloud management and infrastructure as well. As a portal, you can use the System Center App Controller to become your self-service portal. So users like my boss or the project manager or even the owner, application owners, can use this, and you can create on VMM and publish on this portal to become available. You don't need to give full access to your infrastructure. It's basically give access to this portal, and everything it will be usable. So then you have all the other stack of the operations manager that we will show some of the products. Like operations manager is responsible for monitoring and starting some of the automation. Service manager is, as you know, probably the IT service management portal. So you can bring your SLAs and all the IT service manager. Orchestrator is a fundamental piece here if you have a very heavy and a very complex infrastructure that you can deploy if you want to even have more granularity on your infrastructure. And then Data Protection Manager is the responsible for protecting and backing up and restoring your infrastructure. So finish with all the marketing slides. Let's talk about the technology. SharePoint automation. On SharePoint automation, you can automate as many. You can automate as many as you want. So this is the screenshot of the integration pack inside of the orchestrator that you can download and you can import it. And then you can see, you can create runbooks that is nothing more tasks that you have a workflow of tasks that you can create it as you want to do this. So in this one, it's very simple. You are monitoring a list. So basically what I'm using is a SharePoint form or a SharePoint site that I create a list, an entry. And on that list, Orchestrator is monitoring that list to create another VMs, for example. Okay. So in this case, I just enter a list. I fill all the data that I needed. Then what Orchestrator does is starting the runbook. So the second task, besides the first one, is monitoring, is a trigger, is starting the VM. So we'll contact VMM to create that VM and create another SharePoint form if it's needed, and then update the list with, okay, it's done, and send an email to the user saying, hey, your VM that you did apply on SharePoint is here, is the URL, everything is working fine. So just to see that you can automate this process with Orchestrator. So all of those functionalities is. So regarding the script that we are using and we will make available for you guys to use it, you have a couple of parameters that you have to set up. And basically what it does is create forms for you. So automatically after deploying the VM, it installs the SQL and installs the SQL and installs only the binaries of the SharePoint. It's starting to do all the job for you. So one of the things, it creates the forms, create site collections for you, create all the web applications that you need, it's create all the content DBs and attach those content DBs to the site collections, create the sites that you need. So I have this script to running on the farm that you can deploy 10,000 sites on the SharePoint in less than 12 hours. We're talking about 10,000 sites on one farm and takes 12 hours. If you're doing this manually, as you can imagine, it will take some time. It's not
good,
12 hours.
It's good for job security, though.
It is. Yeah. If you want your retirement plan, yes, for sure. Then configure all the permissions for you, the file size that you can upload if you want to not use the default. You can configure even the infrastructure of SharePoint. So outgoing mail, the integration with SharePoint, with Exchange, for example. We will define functionalities like quotas for each user and a lot of things. So this is like a year and a half of working and developing this script. These scripts are very similar on the internet as well. If you go into TechNet Gallery, yeah, it's over there, some of the script. But this script is very good. I will make the link when you download the presentation and I submit the final version. I will make available for you guys.
So you're going to actually give this production-ready script to everybody that's here?
Yes.
Well, that's really nice of you.
Yeah.
So this is tried and tested production ready stuff, all right? This isn't something that Marcos just took and cooked up in his basement 2 days before TechEd. This is what he actually uses in production for his deployments. So I just want to put some context around that. You guys are looking for a little gold nugget for why you came to the session. This one's going to be really cool. So just stay tuned. We'll probably have that available. He's just got some final polishes to make it kind of downloadable, ready, and friendly. But he's going to take and make that available via his blog site. All right? So just stay tuned. That's a really cool, nice value add that we were able to throw in for you guys.
Okay. So to move on, let's see if our God is with us. So now
What are you on number six?
Okay.
Can you see that?
So this is, if you are not familiar with, this is Virtual Machine Manager. So I'm here, I have two, in this case, two service templates. Just to give you an idea how simple it is, if I open the designer, I have the three tiers template. So I have the web front end that I'm using, that is on my left side. On the middle side is the application one, and then I have the SQL on my right side. So basically, if I want to deploy this, this is not fully automated, just to show how deep we can go, but what are the options that we can use. So if I want, just click over here. This is the view of the VMM administrator, so you can deploy this on App Controller as well. So I will say like tech ad 2014, and when I start that, it's automatically say, hey, you have some problem. You didn't set up hosts for this farm. Okay, no problem. So I come over here on the hosts, or starting on this, I say, let's select the host. Because I only have one, I will select always the same host. And by selecting that, so this is most the manual part. Of course, that you can automate this. Automatically gives me this. So if I refresh the preview, here he goes.
That's just some built-in job security for you, Marcos, because if everything worked perfectly on the first try, then we wouldn't have jobs anymore.
Exactly. So let's use this one. This is the most simple one, probably. He didn't like that.
I got to tell you guys a little story while he's preparing for that. You know, the demo god issues? Well, we have another laptop with everything pre-configured on it that the hard drive decides to crap out last night. So this was a quick rebuild for us of most of the labs and some very long hours that were put in to get to this point. So
this...
That's looking a little bit better, Marcos.
Yes, it does. So now it's basically... On service deploy, you just deploy this, starting the deployment. And then if you come on the virtual machine, on the virtual here, it will see that will deploy, starting to deploy. See? The virtual machine. So it will take a time. We'll come to this later.
So you want to come back to that and check that later?
Yeah.
So you're putting the uncooked bird in the oven right now? Come back to that in 10 minutes.
It will take about 18 minutes to deploy this VM, basically. And what it does is it will configure everything. And when it finish, it will see the site. And we have the VM starting with all the configuration. And it takes about 18 minutes to just install SQL, configure SQL, install SharePoint, configure SharePoint. And this is on a laptop. So by doing this on production, I can take about 15 to 14 minutes to spin up one SharePoint with tier two. So two VMs, one with SQL and the other one with SharePoint. Because we have limited resources on those laptops, I just choose to just consolidate one in everything in one machine. It's even simpler, but takes more time because you cannot do it parallel processing regarding that. That's why it takes longer.
Marcos, I have a quick question for you just in regards to your experience with your customer deployments that you have.
Okay.
You guys have seen a lot of issues where you come into existing customer environments where SharePoint might not be configured properly. With your current company that you're working at, what do you guys do? Do you guys like provide the script to them and say, this is our recommended guidance to use the scripted deployment so that they don't run into issues?
If they don't have, it's a good question. And if they don't have the infrastructure of Virtual Machine Manager and sometimes the orchestrator, we can have that environment for them and we deploy it. Or we can use, if they want, the automate process of MDT, that we have that option as well, and we integrate those scripts that we'll provide for you to automate this process. So cool. It's simple to do it. It's so simple that we did restore this morning, and probably the next demo that is the monitoring, we will see that I don't have so many issues regarding the configuration. I did try to, as much as possible, to delete something to just appear there, because it will be very awkward to just show the monitoring and nothing to appear on the monitoring side.
Don't worry, Marcos. While you were presenting, I actually went into your VM and I touched a few things, so you should see lots of errors in there now.
Thank you.
If you want something broken, just let me touch the keyboard for 15 minutes.
Thank you very much. So regarding the monitoring part, so Operations Manager, you already have the management packs. It's not available to download to the Operations Manager. You have to download and import on the disk. But this is what you see when you import out of the box the management pack. So it integrates and with Operations Manager and give you a lot of issues and knowledge regarding your infrastructure. So, and you have services that you can see it, outages, and you can even integrate with the Windows and the other management packs to give even more information. What you can have is, this is an example of a dashboard that you can see in overview picture, what is your infrastructure look like. And then you can see on drill down, if you're starting to see the drill down, that you have some issues with your SharePoint. And when you're starting to drill down, you can see where is the issue and sometimes having some actions. So you have this kind of dashboard if you have multiple servers, and you can use the cloud as well. So you can have those kind of dashboards, rich dashboards, and the performance one. So you can see, and this probably it will help you to decide what is the best way to implement SharePoint, is those dashboards, especially for inbox reporting and other ones. There are several partners, even on the tech expo, that they can help you with those dashboards as well. This is out of the box coming on Operations Manager. Okay. Regarding the configuration, you have System Center Advisor. So System Center Advisor, it's a component inside of Operations Manager that integrates with you and give you all the best practices that coming from Microsoft, analyze your infrastructure, and give you all the alerts and what you need to do regarding your infrastructure. So it's proactively actively, so it looks for what's your environment and says, hey, you're probably running out of space, or your SharePoint is slow, and you probably want to review that option or that subsystem, and then you can be proactive instead of being reactive. And you can see on the customer side, and you can, if you are even here and you want to have a kind of a view what's happening on your infrastructure on the premises, you can use the System Center Advisor portal that is a cloud-based, or you can use your console inside of your Operations Manager to see as well. We will see that in a few moments. The good thing, or one of the best thing that I did like, is when I did upgrade my Operations Manager for 2012 R2, and that's a very good tip to upgrade. It's given me lots of things that I didn't know that I have badly configured, like problems with my cache on my SQL, or the application that we use, it's heavily using the cache on SQL to just become more fast regarding the SharePoint. All of these functionalities and features that you probably enable on purpose, they come in like saying back, say, hey, your SQL, it's on 19% of usage of memory, for example. That is not good sometimes, okay? So inside of the management pack, this is all the things that it's covered by the management pack. Okay? Installing the management package is very simple. You have the own actions. You just click import management pack, and then you just select the file and we'll import for you. It's so simple that if you have any kind of issue or if there are some link to another management pack that you need, it will give you that opportunity to just download as well and just install it and install it for you. Very simple. Okay? So this is one of the things that coming regarding, and I always see, it's the Run As account. Make sure that your Run As account that will monitoring the SharePoint, it's the form administrator and site collection administrator, and must be it must access as well all the database that SharePoint creates. Those databases that SharePoint creates must be accessible for this Run As account because it will monitoring everything for you. Okay, so ensure that you have that list. And this is the example that you can see. So the status of the configuration say, hey, your admin is ensuring that you need to be accessed. And that is where you just put your machine name and you can script that and everything it's done as well. So it's one of the things that the script does as well. It's give you for this. And then you can see your distributed applications with a quick glance with the dashboard. So by doing that, you can work almost on real time regarding SharePoint. You can save time and efforts. You can move all the components, as you can show, and you can switch or extend the switch, the routers, the ADS, Active Directory, everything that you have, you can have it as well. So this is what you can do to just monitoring the SharePoint instead of having this, because operations manager needs some time to just collect all the information. The systems integrated R2, it's a great tool. So let's see if the demo will help us as well. So again,
six. Yeah, you're good.
So I have here the operations manager. So I have only one VM that I'm monitoring. So I already deploy that VM. Let's see if the other VM is up. Yep. The other VM it's up and running. So probably we have. So this is the website that I'm monitoring right now. Let's see if the other website is up. It's exactly the same. But instead of the one is the two. Oh.
How many of you, just by a show of hands, are using Operations Manager right now inside of your data centers? Fantastic. All right. So that import of that management pack really isn't that big of a deal. How many of you are running in a hybrid configuration just while Marcos is getting this up and running for us with VMware and or Hyper-V? Okay, so just so you know, there's some awesome management packs that are available from Veeam Software as well. It's not a plug for them. It's just they do a really good job building an extensible VMware management pack. So that dashboard type, that application view, you can see all of your VMware host servers in there as well. So you can have that all in kind of one holistic view for you.
So this is the first time that we are hitting the site. It will take some time to just load, but you can see that it's working and everything it's deployed. It was quicker, I think, than we predicted, because this is probably it's faster than my laptop. So regarding the operations manager, here it's our server healthy. If we're going to the, this is some alerts.
Oh. I didn't touch it. It wasn't me.
Really?
No, I didn't touch anything.
Okay.
I think that's the answer that we all get from the person that actually broke
so
it.
So this is what you see regarding the management pack, the active alerts regarding the... Oh, they are going away. The active alerts regarding SharePoint, I don't have nothing right now. It's too soon for that, and it's a brand new site, so I didn't starting to touch regarding this. But the cool part of this is if you're going to Advisor, you have your server here that is monitoring. So I already opened this, and this is exactly the dashboard that you can see regarding the Advisor. So this is the dashboard on System Center Advisor. As you can see, this is the limit preview that has been released today. So you are seeing this monitoring SharePoint. Right now, I don't have any alerts I can try to see.
Marcos, can I fix your script? Because this really isn't going to be good for my consulting business if you deploy SharePoint this fast.
No, it isn't. And I want just to show you here the current. Okay, so just to show here the current.
I'm not a very good PowerShell coder, so I could really fix this script.
Okay, see, here is some of the things that we are monitoring. As you can see, we are monitoring the virtual machine. I know the IP, and this is on the cloud. I know the IP of the machine or what IP they are using, even IPv4 or IPv6. So I have a pretty good idea what's happened on my VM. And this is, like I said, this morning I just placed this. And it's already been on the cloud available. So all the alerts that is coming, it's coming either to the System Center Advisor, the cloud, or through the Operations Manager console. And you can integrate with both. So I have a couple of examples here. That, for example, like this, the PowerShell failed to run. That's always good. Advisor import. So here, see, the advisor told me that he cannot import the last management knowledge pack. So all of those alerts that's coming from the advisor are attached to a knowledge base of Microsoft. So instead of having the issue and looking and just copy and paste on the search engine like Bing, not the other one that is a verb, but the Bing, and just looking for that and search it, I have a button over there that say, hey, view the knowledge base here, click and open the knowledge base that is related to that alert. This is save time sometimes, and a lot of times it give me more idea what I did configure not correctly, not say wrong, but not correctly, and then I could update my script with a lot of things regarding special configuration of SQL and even configuration of some web applications and permissions that I did miss. And sometimes I see some kind of those behaviors on the client side, then I have to fix it. But if I'm doing that previously on that script that I will give to you guys, it will be very easy to deploy. Okay?
Right on. All right, what was it, 7 or 8 here? I think it was it 8?
I think so. Yeah.
That looks good.
So, last phase. The last phase, it's probably one of those that we did implement, and sometimes we only remember when we have bad luck, or with Murphy is around our infrastructure. So, DPM, or System Center Data Protection Manager, is a great tool, and it's integrated with SharePoint as well. So you can integrate the VMs or based on your infrastructure or even the databases to know. So it gives you access, or it uses the technology of VSS writers that will grab the SharePoint database and will backing up that. So it's really powerful, and you can see it. So we will see this in a few moments. And give you the inline Eaton level recovery. So if you want to recover a Eaton inside of a list, you can do it. It's very easy to do it, very easy to implement. And you can use, of course, this is already coming to reduce the storage. So with dedupe, it's already enabled. And you can delegate administrations. And with each DPM comes 25 terabytes of protection. So it's a really good solution. Of course, that you can deploy this, and this is an example of what kind of database that you want to deploy and what kind of members that you have. And you can have Data Protection Manager to backup as well as a solution. Instead of backup disk to disk to tape, you can use now disk to disk to Azure. So the last one will be the Azure.
And that's built right into the product, Marcos?
Yes, it's built. So let me show you that.
This is really cool because I know a lot of my customers today are getting rid of tape. You know, they're going to either, you know, better nearline solutions, you know, big disk arrays like NAS devices or something that they can just dump to, but they still have a requirement to take and push a lot of that data offsite, get it somewhere. The nice thing about pushing that up to Azure is that you can take and now easily geo-replicate that information as well, and you can take and meet a lot of your compliance needs very, very easily by just dumping that right up in there. And the cool part about the integration between Azure and DPM is the fact that it's integrated right into the product. So it's a checkbox, configure your account, and you can start shipping your data up there. So it's very cool that this is right there and part of the System Center suite, so integrated right in.
This is the SharePoint one, the one that I did deploy this morning. And immediately after, I start to do a lot of backups regarding this. So you can see on, let me open or let me grab the content database. So you see that the content database, it's 10 gigs allocated. I'm using only 760 megs only to the recover point. So it says that my backup, it's only 760 megs because of all the dedupe. And it's allocated 4.7 gigs. So 4.5 gigs, it's allocating on the inside of my disks. So it's pretty cool. So here, it's on the management side is where you have the online one.
I didn't touch it, sorry.
Seriously? So online one, you just manage the subscription, and over here, if Dave didn't touch this previously, you should see this.
It's a challenge
on,
demo.
On the green. Yeah, but you are on TechEd.
I know.
It's different.
I thought it was funny.
Yeah, sure.
We had some connectivity issues this morning, so.
Yeah, we have some connectivity issues with wireless. So you should see here the one server and all databases backing up to this. But you can see the servers. No, not even the server you can see on Azure. So it will create. So if I want to create, let me give you another example. So if I want to create another protection groups, come on.
It's my laptop, so if it's slow, it's my laptop.
If I want to create another protection group, so I already create for all the databases.
While he's doing that, how many of you have looked at using DPM for backing up your SharePoint infrastructure? Not very many. You guys should look at this. It's come a long way, and there's still continual advancements that the Microsoft product teams have been putting into DPM. Very, very cool, and especially with a lot of the new cloud-based add-ons, it's something you should really look at.
So here is the option when you create that you can say that, okay, I want to backup to disk to disk, and then you have the option over there to just select the cloud. Of course, that is option is gray because I don't have right now the cloud integration. But if I add, it's very simple to implement. On this side as well, you have here the option that you can resume or you can create a recovery point. And right now you only have disks, but you have online protection. So basically, using these recovery points, what you're doing is using the VSS technology that you have available for SharePoint in this case, or the Windows, to just backup your database to a file, or to a disk, and then from a disk it will synchronize with Azure. Okay, so it's pretty cool. It will compress everything. So if you have like 100 gigs database on SQL, or in this case on SharePoint, you are not sending that database entirely to the cloud, because that probably takes a few time or a few hours. Okay. So then it's 8. So as in conclusion, all the SharePoint can be virtualized with Windows Server Hyper-V. All the SQL as well can be virtualized with Hyper-V. SQL 2014 is the best until now, is the last version. Okay, it's not yet fully supported, or I did have some issues regarding the whole stack, especially the SharePoint. On TechNet, it's not yet fully supported. DPM cannot work with, for example, with 2014. SharePoint works best with Hyper-V than the others hypervisors as well. And SharePoint with, or in this case, Windows Server, Hyper-V with systems in 2012 is protected with DPM. Okay, both are.
Awesome, right on. Well, I think we've got a few minutes for questions.
Questions? Nope.
Anybody have any questions? We got one at the back. If you could go to the mic.
Use the mic.
So you mentioned earlier about getting hot fixes for Hyper-V hosts. Where's the best place to find those Hyper-V hot fixes and to know if there's a new one?
There's some good blog posts that are available. If you follow some of the Hyper-V MVPs inside of the community, we've got some good information that's posted up there surrounding that. Microsoft's also got some TechNet download links as well for those hot fixes. If you're looking to automate it, the Hyper-V MVP community has done a really good job of taking and coming up with some starter scripts for you. But TechNet has that information. Just have to just search on Bing for, you know, Hyper-V hot fixes, and you'll find a listing of the available hot fixes. And they are different if you're clustering versus standalone hosts. You require less patches if you're just going to be doing standalone host servers. Good question. Thank you. Yes, we got a couple over here.
How do you guys manage the patches piece where you have to run psconfig on all the server? Do you use same mechanism to run the patches for SharePoint?
So regarding the patchment, the question was regarding the patchment of SharePoint.
Right. When you apply SharePoint patches, you have to run psconfig separately, right? So do you guys manage same procedures?
I manage through the System Center Configuration Manager.
Okay. So it's available now on that, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Concerning the, you're talking about the patches for Hyper-V, we always struggle with the integration components. Is there ever going to be just a centralized way to get an at-a-glance view of where we're all at with all our integration components? Because when we have hundreds of host servers and thousands of VMs, it's nearly impossible to keep track of these, and we see lots of backup failures because of that, just all sorts of problems that come up. Right now, we have to run PowerShell scripts, and we have to, you know, try to find the best one and manipulate it and, you know, make sure it's doing its thing correctly. Is it all just, it seems like it's not a very streamlined process for this, where we have to go on a hunt to find these hot fixes, and then we got to get the integration components up to date. There's no like System Center view or anything, or Virtual Machine Manager management of that.
There's no easy button for it at this point in time. A lot of the scripts and stuff that are used to automate that we're talking about, or what most people are taking using, can automate that with, you know, VMM and Operations Manager and Config Manager, what you're using to manage your data center, to automate some of that process. But the actual finding and downloading of the hot fixes, or finding out that there's issues, it's like anything. You've got to stay on top of things, right? It's not really a heck of a lot different than what the other guys have. If they have a critical issue that's released, then they're going to release a hot fix. And it's not necessarily going to go into general distribution unless you understand to know where to look. So if you've got a large Hyper-V farm, then you're probably subscribed to those news groups and stuff like that that are publishing that information, or pretty tightly integrated with the Hyper-V kind of MVP community, because we try to get that information out there as fast as we can.
Sounds like I need to be more so.
Yeah, it's not the easy
thing. I'm newer. Yeah. All right. Thanks.
I wish there was an easy button for it.
Well, is there ever any plans to make that a little quicker?
There's continual evolvements inside of the platform. I think the nice thing is that when you look at the Windows Azure platform, that's running on Hyper-V, right? So you're not going to have a larger deployment than that in the world. So what's going to drive the innovation around that is going to be a lot of the things that Microsoft is dogfooding internally, right? So they're not just leaving this out to customers to try to figure stuff out. So yeah, there's advancements coming faster than what I can keep up with them, and I'm a Hyper-V MVP, so.
All right, good enough, thanks.
Yes.
So for replicating, so are you talking about taking and like replicating using Hyper-V replication? It depends on what type of workloads are going to be running inside of there. Marcos, I'm not sure for the SharePoint workloads. Normally what I do if I'm looking at replicating to offsite or DR, if I'm looking at Exchange or SQL workloads, normally I'm log shipping or availability groups, and I'm having an active node that's actually running in the other data center to start with from a SQL perspective. If it's going to be something that's going to be a scalable web front end or static content and things that don't typically change, I'm looking at kind of a replication model for those pieces, and that's typically how I'm going to do things because I want my active data sets there, and the inherent availability groups that like SQL will provide you are going to be faster than any type of asynchronous replication model that I'm going to have. And even going synchronous replication at the SAN level, that's still got some lag in behind. So the application SQL itself kind of takes care of getting that stuff from data center A to B. Was that what your question was? Yeah.
So just to thank you all, this is some rated sessions that you probably can go deeply on some of the subjects that we cover more in overview. I definitely recommend. And for all, don't forget to complete your evaluations to win the great Xbox One. And thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.